Big news! The sale of the season is here. It's Wayfair's Black Friday sale, and it's on now. Right now, get up to 80% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Essentials for the guest room, whether it's new bedding or a new mattress. Kitchen and dining must-haves for all your hosting needs. And seasonal home finds like throw pillows and decor. Or favorites that you'll use all year long. And with amazing doorbuster deals from November 27th through December 2nd, you can shop the things you love at even lower prices at Wayfair. Plus, you can sit back and relax with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping. Everything home comes straight to your home. And the best part? Free delivery just in time for the holidays. This Black Friday, Wayfair deals are bigger and better than ever. There's no place like home for the holidays. And no place like Wayfair for Black Friday savings. So don't wait. Black Friday ends soon. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now and save up to 80% off at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has said he's ready to work with the United States on a peace plan. He does not want to be seen to be frustrating any diplomatic efforts. It follows a draft peace plan being submitted to Ukraine that appears to have been discussed only between the US and Russia and includes a list of items that seem favorable to Russia, including recognizing their control over eastern Ukrainian regions, including areas that they currently do not control. Ukraine will not join NATO, and there are many other points that we need to talk about. Donika Bachoin is professor of politics at the School of Law and Government at DCU and author of Unfinished Empire. Donika, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, this it looks like a sellout of Ukraine, and we can go through a number of the issues. But as I went through the 28 points, it's astonishing that anyone other than an idiot could have proposed this as in any way acceptable.
Absolutely. It's just a Kremlin wish list. And what's all the more remarkable is that it's been passed on to Kyiv with the US administration's imprimatur. So this is dead in the water. I mean, it's not going to go anywhere. It's a colossal waste of time and energy on you know, Europe's behalf, on Ukraine's behalf. But we've been here before, as you know well. I mean, back in August, there was huge hysteria about this summit in Anchorage in Alaska that was going to change everything. And of course, nothing happened. And I feel we're back to this point again. But it does demonstrate the influence that Russia seems to have on Donald Trump's thinking, because this is a massive strategic victory for Russia.
Now, I'll read out some of the points. It's expected that Russia will not invade neighboring countries, okay? But however, it insists that Ukraine does not, but it's expected that Russia will not invade neighboring countries. Ukraine will receive reliable security guarantees. That's something that's supposed to be good for them. But Ukraine agrees to enshrine in its constitution that it will not join NATO. In its constitution, in exchange, it gets a U.S. guarantee, but the U.S. will receive compensation in exchange. In other words, it'll be paid for its guarantee. The United States will cooperate with Ukraine to jointly rebuild, develop, modernize and operate Ukraine's gas infrastructure. Money for the U.S. again. Extraction of minerals and resources, the U.S. again. And they're looking not to spend any money themselves, but looking to the World Bank, Pascal Donohue, to develop a special financing package for this whole process. The one bit that the Russians might like is that frozen funds will be used. 100 billion of Russian assets will be invested in US-led efforts to rebuild and invest in Ukraine. And the US will receive 50% of the profits from this venture. And Europe will add 100 billion to increase the amount of investment. This is crazy, crazy, crazy stuff. Russia will enshrine in law its policy of non-aggression towards Europe and Ukraine. Now, who'd believe that? Would you buy a second-hand car from Vladimir Putin? No, you would not. And then odd things like the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant will be launched under the supervision of the International Atomic Energy Agency, and the electricity produced will be distributed equally between Russia and Ukraine, 50-50. So they want to steal the power. And it goes on and on. There's stuff about, you know, what happened during the war. All parties involved in the conflict will receive a full amnesty for their actions during the war and agree not to make any claims to consider any complaints in the future. In other words, forget about the butchering of the people of Bucha. And then they talk about returning hostages and reuniting families, you know, abducting children and then saying it's a favour to give them back. I don't know. Anyway, Donika, that's a summary of some of the points to demonstrate how one-sided and crazy it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good summary, and it's hard to know where to start. I mean, if you're taking Europe's perspective, it makes a lot of commitments regarding Europe's security architecture without involving Europe. As you say, I mean, it's clearly profit motivated as well. So Russian frozen assets in the US would be, as you say, used jointly for the United States' benefit. They would gain a profit from it, whereas the 140 billion in Russian frozen assets that's held in the EU would be unfrozen and given to Russia, and 100 billion would be paid out of EU taxpayers' money for the reconstruction of Ukraine, which neither the US nor Russia would be involved in. I mean, it's just making commitments on other people's behalf. It talks about preferential treatment that the EU would give Ukraine, again, without discussing this with either Ukraine or the EU.
It looks like America doesn't want to spend anything, either its own money or indeed put any effort into anything. No boots on the ground, nothing to help in the effort. This is just writing headlines for Trump.
Absolutely. And then Trump personally chairs something which the document calls a peace council. So you have U.S. domestic politics inserted into European security. And this enforcement would depend only on Trump's political incentives. It wouldn't depend on international law. International law is completely sidelined here. That's why they talk about indemnifying war criminals. I mean, the International Criminal Court has a warrant for the arrest of Vladimir Putin. And yet it's stated in this document that there would be a general amnesty for the massacres, for the torture chambers, for the abduction of children and everything else. That's not in the gift of anybody. I mean, if a crime has been committed, there are international justice systems where criminals will be pursued, and no kind of draft agreement that the US and Russia devised can sideline that.
Now, try to understand why this stupid document has been tabled in the first place. Can we get behind that? I mean, Witkoff, he probably should be called Half Witkoff because this is so stupid. But, I mean, his name is going to be on it beside Donald J. Trump's. Why has this happened?
Well, I mean, as you know, Donald Trump, from the time he took office, was very bullish about the prospects of him bringing peace, because it's never really about the objective reality of peace in Ukraine. It's about, he bringing peace. He's already declared that he's brought 8 wars to an end around the world between Kosovo and Serbia, which nobody realized were at war. And he keeps referring to Albania and Azerbaijan when he means Armenia and Azerbaijan. He doesn't even know the names of the places whose conflicts that he's allegedly solved. So this was kind of, for him, a big prize, and he's frustrated with the fact that, despite the fact that he said more than 50 times during his election campaign that he would solve this within 24 hours, almost a year has passed and there's been no breakthrough. So early on, his own instincts told him that Ukraine is the weaker party, so let's apply pressure on Ukraine. And Russia has these maximalist demands, so if we give Russia what they want, apply pressure on Ukraine, we'll make a breakthrough. It would be much harder to do things in reverse. And that meant, of course, abandoning Ukraine. It meant abandoning his allies in Europe. But that's been more or less, if you're trying to detect some degree of consistency to Donald Trump. I mean, he does flip-flop, he does zigzag, but ultimately he comes back to this strong relationship with Putin, this idea of a grand bargain with Russia that Ukraine is somehow getting in the way of, and of course that Ukraine doesn't hold the cards, going back to that infamous blow-up in the Oval Office. That's when you saw the real Donald Trump approach to Vladimir Zelensky, and then you contrast that with his welcome of Vladimir Putin in Anchorage, the way that, the red carpet and the flyover, all that treatment, which is never afforded, of course, to Zelensky. So there's a very different approach to both Russia and Ukraine. And this document simply embodies that approach. Witkoff, of course, is a nobody in the real world. He's simply an emissary for Donald Trump. His background is, of course, real estate. And that's why they keep talking in terms of bargains and deals, when obviously much more fundamental issues are at stake.
Now, the other demand of Ukraine is that it reduces its armed force to 600,000 men and women, which would basically halve its army. I mean, the whole idea seems to be to neutralize Ukraine entirely, to render it basically a puppet satellite of Russia, even if Russia does not run Kyiv. but that it'll run part of the country that it doesn't even have now under occupation. I mean, it does seem to ask the impossible of the Ukrainians. They know, the Russians do, that this will be turned down. So why bother with it? Is it a delaying tactic so that they can inflict more damage? Are they trying to recuperate, maybe get some sort of a temporary ceasefire so they can rebuild their forces? We know they're running short of manpower.
Well, it's really difficult to get into the mind of the authors of this document, only to say that obviously it echoes what Russia wants. And as I said, the US has now for the last year felt that giving Russia what it wants brings an end to the conflict more quickly than supporting Ukraine. That's more or less the assumption that's there. As you say, I mean, the idea of capping Ukraine's military is simply inviting attacks in the future. There's no, I mean, Ukraine gets the worst of all worlds. They're asked to hand over territory, which they currently control. So it's not just a matter of freezing the front line. It's areas that, I mean, Russia first invaded Donbass in 2014. So 11 years later, they still haven't managed to capture cities like Kramatorsk and Slovyansk, despite, you know, a lot of carnage, a lot of bombs and drones and whatnot. And they're asking Volodymyr Zelensky to adopt a position which would be politically suicidal, which is to hand over territory, not only territory, of course, the people who live there without a fight. Indeed, they fought and defended these positions. And if they did hand over those areas, I mean, they're heavily fortified, it would leave the areas behind those vulnerable to attack in the future. Not to mention, of course, the trauma that would be visited upon the people who live there. And of course, we have to remember that, you know, there have been agreements in the past. There was the 1994 Budapest Memorandum. There were the Minsk agreements. These have not been honored by Russia. So, you know, the idea that we can trust Donald Trump to keep Vladimir Putin in his place, there's no evidence to suggest that every time that there's been a phone call between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump, there's been an escalation on the ground in Ukraine.
So the question always comes back to what the Russians and particularly Putin has on Donald Trump, because he's acting in a way which is, on the face of it, irrational and possibly, although the MAGA group want to keep Donald Trump out of foreign affairs, there are other Republicans and many Democrats who'll say, listen, we have allies. We've got to respect our allies. We've got to honor commitments that we make as a sovereign nation. So what does, and we ask the question again and again, what does Putin have on Trump? Is it all about money, laundering money? Is it about compromat of some kind?
There are a variety of theories. Compromat is one of them, of course, because Donald Trump has long established relations to Moscow. He was visiting Moscow during the Cold War when it was the Soviet Union. So, you know, there's always that idea that when people of substance visit the US, that they're followed, that their, you know, hotel rooms are tapped and even video recorded. Indeed, Vladimir Putin, one of the reasons he became president in the first place is he managed to video record the prosecutor general in bed with two prostitutes. And that brought an end to this corruption investigation to Boris Yeltsin. Boris Yeltsin was very grateful and he nominated Vladimir Putin to be prime minister and then president. So he has form in this. It could be something along those lines. We don't have hard evidence, but there is that suspicion. It could be as simple that, you know, Donald Trump simply admires Vladimir Putin. Mm. I mean, he does certainly seem at ease with strongmen. You just look at his press conference this week with the Saudi Arabian dictator when, you know, when he was asked a very simple question about the murder of Khashoggi, which the CIA itself said was ordered by the Saudi Arabian dictator. Trump came to his aid, admonished the ABC journalist for asking such a disrespectful question, described Khashoggi as a difficult man, in other words, almost justifying his execution. Why he rushed to the aid of a Saudi Arabian dictator and confronted his own journalist in a democracy, again, it tells you a lot about Donald Trump's inclinations.
Now, a Democratic congressman asked a question in the House about the release of the transcript of a phone call made by Donald Trump during his first term with Mohammed bin Salman, and he compared it to the release of the phone call that he had with Zelensky, where he was trying to nail the Biden family. So there's something scandalous there that they want released to indicate maybe the genesis of that relationship with Mohammed bin Salman. I don't know if you ever saw the like of it. He had troops on horseback as well as a red carpet to welcome Mohammed bin Salman. It was quite extraordinary because MBS is not the head of state. He is de facto, but not in fact.
Yeah, but that's the kind of treatment that Trump gets in these countries as well. You might remember that it was Qatar, I think, that gave him a private jet, you know, worth, I think, something in the region of $500 million. So, you know, that's why Trump, you know, doesn't understand in a way why he doesn't get such receptions in democracies in Europe. I mean, he feels that they criticize him, they highlight his imperfections, they don't take him seriously, whereas he goes to these autocrats and they roll out the red carpet, they have these fantastic displays. And he believes that that's that he merits that, but also he feels that therefore he reciprocates that when they come to visit him. And as I said, certainly the red carpet treatment he gave Vladimir Putin has to be contrasted with how he treats Volodymyr Zelensky when he visits. And you're right to of course, talk about that early conversation with Volodymyr Zelensky. The very first conversation they had after Zelensky was elected in 29 was Trump strong-arming Zelensky, trying to get him to, as you say, dig up the dirt on Hunter Biden and holding back congressionally approved aid for Ukraine until he did so. So that was, of course, the origins of the impeachment process against Donald Trump. So he's never looked at Ukraine favorably in that respect.
Now, finally, I should ask whether this is all a deliberate distraction. I mean, Steve Witkoff seemingly released a message which Axios got and had the scoop that the US is preparing a peace plan for Ukraine with Russia, and whether or not that was timed to take some of the Epstein heat away, we'll never know, because you'd imagine that Witkoff should know how to send a message without it being revealed to the world.
Yeah, that was bizarre, that when that kind of leak of the 28-point plan was made by that media agency, that Steve Witkoff was on Twitter saying it must have been leaked by Kay, as he said. That was Kirill, the Russian negotiator. And then, of course, he quickly deleted it. So it seems that the man who is entrusted with solving the crisis in the Middle East, indeed bringing peace to Russia and Ukraine, doesn't know how to send a direct message on Twitter. So it gives you some idea of the type of amateur diplomats that we have in charge of the US administration right now.
Donika, thank you very much for joining us. Donika O'Bahoin, Professor of Politics at the School of Law and Government at DCU, author of Unfinished Empire. Now,
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home. These are our best deals of the year. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.